Welcome to Triple Take, the podcast where we talk to interesting people about the book, album, and film that shaped them. I'm Carla Jean Whitley.
And I'm Matt Scalise.
John's tied up and sad to miss this episode.
Our guests today are the Secret Sisters, Laura and Lydia Rogers, who are from the Shoals area of Alabama, and who basically, I'm just going to go ahead and put this out there. If you haven't listened to these ladies, then you're sorely missing out. We're allowed to fangirl on this program, right? I think that's okay. Anyway, so I'm excited to talk with y'all, but I wanted to start by complaining a little bit. And that is only because you've got this great Christmas tour coming up and the Alabama stops are not in Birmingham. And I'm sad. But I might have to drive across the state to see you.
Yeah, just come on down to Montgomery and see us at the Christmas tree lighting.
that's not a bad drive at all.
Yeah.
So you guys do have these events coming up. What should listeners or fans expect when they go to these shows?
Well, you should probably expect a few Christmas songs. We've been trying to work up some just kind of holiday-spirited tunes, as well as our new record. We're trying to test that out on some audiences and see how they react. So probably a mix of everything. We'll probably do a few Christmas songs, some of our new stuff, some of our old stuff, and it's going to be super stripped down and intimate, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll have a few surprises in there.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And y'all will be in Montgomery on December 2nd and Florence on December 3rd.
Right.
And of course, you know, Florence is up toward your, you know, sort of native stomping grounds. So is it special when you guys get to play in your home area?
Yeah, we definitely love to do that. I will be honest, sometimes it can be a little nerve-wracking when you play close to home because it usually means that you get, like, family and close friends who all want to come to the show. And then it's just this whole different kind of, like, pressure to be good. But we love anything that we get to do anywhere in Alabama, just because usually it means that we get to sleep in our own beds at the end of the evening, and it's always convenient, and we do get to see people that we know. So I think that we always really value whenever we get a Florence stop on our tour list, and we're really excited because that show in Florence is actually with Roseanne Cash, and we're really, really excited to get to be on that bill and play at the Shoals Theater. So I think it'll be pretty good.
Yeah, I would think so. And that's a great venue, too. So that's got to be a lot of fun.
It really is. It's kind of beloved.
Yeah. So tell me, what is the current status of the upcoming album? I know that you guys have been at work on it for a little while now, and as somebody who has already backed the album, I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah,
thank you.
We're excited to get it out. We just finished mixing it. So the next next step is to master and get it out. We're looking at a spring release. We are, you know, in talks with a label right now who just wants to do it correctly, the right way. So it's looking like springtime. But again, we want to make sure that we release it the right way. So we're really excited about it. And it's been a long time coming.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I'm sure that your fans will be excited to hear that. But I think that they'll also be excited to hear a little bit more about some of the art forms that have influenced y'all over the years. And so, of course, that is what we do on every episode of Triple Take, is talk to people about the book, album, and film that shaped them. So, ladies, can you tell me what your picks were?
Sure. So, this is Laura speaking. And for my album, I chose Revival by Gillian Welch. And for my book, I chose To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. And I don't ever watch movies. I just don't. I don't know why. I'm more of a television show on Netflix kind of girl. And so the movie I chose is the Disney classic Peter Pan.
A great pick.
Go ahead, Lydia. Tell them what you chose.
Yeah, okay, thank you for that. My album that I chose was Extraordinary Machine by Fiona Apple, one of my favorite artists of all time. My book I chose was called A Little History of the World by E.H. Gombrich. And then the film, I'm also not an avid movie watcher. My husband's a filmmaker, so that sounds really weird. But I chose Ever After, a Cinderella story.
Which was my costume my senior year of high school. I went to see that movie dressed up like Drew Barrymore's character in the movie.
It's a great one. I never get tired of it.
I love it. I can't wait to hear these conversations.
They should be interesting.
Now, Laura, I have to start by telling you that some of my friends have joked that we should ban To Kill a Mockingbird as an option for the show.
Oh, really?
And
indeed. Why?
Because you're the fourth person to pick it. And
of course.
And I tell them, but it makes my life so easy to get to talk about one of my favorite books over and over and over again.
Right.
So, you know, you should know that you're in good company. Past guests who have chosen it include Rick Bragg, John Archibald, and Will Lockamy, three men who I can say
That's
lots
funny
of nice things
because
about.
My second choice for books was actually Ava's Man by Rick Bragg.
Nice.
So.
See, so you're in really good company.
I hope so.
So tell me about your experience with To Kill a Mockingbird. When did you first read it?
I want to say that I was maybe in like seventh grade, and it was one of those dreaded assigned reading situations. And I never really hated those because I was really, really into literature and the English language, and I was not into things like math and science. And so I did a really good job of reading all the books that the teachers assigned, and those books really they are very imprinted on me, mm-hmm. but nothing was more imprinted than To Kill a Mockingbird. I've always been such a sucker for poetic language and beautiful imagery and storytelling in which you can actually visualize it. And so because of that, I loved To Kill a Mockingbird, and I've read it countless times since, you know, my seventh grade experience. And it's interesting how no matter what age you read it at, it's like it brings something new into your kind of thought process every time that you encounter it. And I just think it is one of the most incredibly written stories that is so engaging and interesting, and you just get so wrapped up in it, and I love it so much.
I'm right there with you. I remember, I think it was assigned reading for ninth grade for me, and I grew up in Florida, but I'm originally from Alabama. And so to me, reading it was like, oh, look, this is about Alabama. And wait, this is a woman writing who is from Alabama. Hey, mm-hmm. I'm like Harper Lee. I mean, you know, that's the way that we think when we're 14. I would still like to be like Harper Lee, but now I know that maybe I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah, I completely, completely understand that. And I think that for whatever reason, especially as an adult, I am so like fiercely proud of the fact that I'm a native Alabamian. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that like one of the most revered novels of all time was written by a woman, and it was the only book that we knew that she had written until a couple years ago, and that's kind of what she has become known for, it's just kind of, it's unreal that can be such an impactful novel. And she doesn't have an entire huge body of work that she kind of cut her teeth on. Like, I wish that I could write a song that was the equivalent of To Kill a Mockingbird, but it would take me 50 years of writing really bad songs to even get close to that level, you know? So, yeah, of course, and the fact that it was written by a woman whose name doesn't really sound feminine at all is incredible. And the fact that Harper Lee just kind of disappeared from the mainstream, like she's kind of this reclusive character that nobody could ever really find. I just think that it just adds to the mysteriousness of that book. And so much of it is just so Southern. Like,
yes.
I identify and recognize so many of the components in the story. And it feels like it took place in my backyard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when I read the book and I imagine the setting of the story and, you know, the little town, I have this image in my head of what it looked like, and I have that same image every time I read it. It's like I've drawn these mental pictures of this book and where it takes place, even though there are no pictures to tell where it's from, but in my mind, I know what the pictures look like every time that I read the book.
Has that influenced, you know, you talked a little bit about trying to write a song of that quality and how long that would take, but has that influenced or inspired your songwriting in any way?
I definitely think that the more I write, I feel like, and not even, not just that book in particular, but I do feel that just like the aspects of being a Southerner and living in rural Alabama, I do find that those things kind of creep into my lyrical content a really good bit.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, the song that we put on our second record called Iuka,
mm-hmm.
Was about a murder in a little town in Mississippi called Iuka. But a couple of the characters in that song, when we were writing it, I was actually channeling Bob Ewell and Mayella Ewell from To Kill a Mockingbird when I envisioned those characters. And so the story of Iuka was directly related to the story in To Kill a Mockingbird and the just kind of the angst of a bad father-daughter relationship. I mean, that book has directly influenced at least one song that we've written together. And I'm sure as we go along, it might find its way into something else.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that that's so neat. I'm totally going to listen to that song a little bit differently now. And then, To Kill a Mockingbird is a novel. It draws from some real life inspiration. And so I tend to think of it as being an important part of Alabama history. But then, Lydia, your book choice is A Little History of the World. And one of the things that I love about doing this podcast is being introduced to books that I haven't yet encountered. So tell me, how did this book come to your attention?
Well, you know, I think I was actually, it was probably 2011. I was in an airport and I was looking for something to read, and this one was on the shelf and it just caught my eye, and it's very simple in the title.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the back, it was written in 1935, so over like 70 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what the title says, just the story of man from the Stone Age up until World War II. And I think it was originally meant for children, which probably says a lot about me, but, it just really had a big impact on me. I don't know. It made me think about the fragility of life and how quickly good people can turn into terrible ones. And I don't know. I just think this is a really good time to be reminded of that.
Absolutely.
You know, we need to decide like whether we want future generations to thank or blame us for where they are, you know. And I think this is just a really good reminder. It just covers everything you can think of in history, really quickly. And I honestly and admittedly I don't know much about history at all, so it was a good like spark notes kind of thing.
That's part of what appeals to me about it too, is, you know, in 40 chapters, you get so much insight into the world, and you know, it explores so many different ideas, the different world religions, these different moments in history.
Right.
And
sure.
Sometimes I get a little bit sad that we learn history in class when we're young, because for me, it didn't start to make sense. I didn't really care about it until I was in my mid-20s or so.
No, totally. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I don't know, just reading as an adult, it just put things very simply. It was very straightforward. And I don't know, it just makes you realize how small you are, which is kind of sad, but also comforting in a way. Just makes you, you know, makes you think that you can make an impact, but you don't have to try so hard all the time.
Yeah.
I know that's super stupid and deep, but I don't know. It evoked a lot of thoughts. So I think that's my favorite now.
Yeah. Has it affected how you move through the world in any way?
Totally. It actually kind of messed me up for a while.
Yeah.
After reading the first chapter, like I was talking about being so small and It just made me kind of like I don't, I'm so small that I don't have to care. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it messed me up in that way for a while, but I kind of see it now as, like I said, you just don't have to try as hard and always be 100%.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like, but, yeah. I can make some small difference perhaps, but probably I'm not going to be able mm-hmm. to screw everything up for everybody else either.
Totally. Yeah.
There's some freedom
in only
that.
A select few have done that. So.
Yes, and let's not be like those.
Right, yeah. Yeah, totally.
But Peter, how do we get to Neverland?
Fly, of course.
Fly?
It's easy.
Well, so Carla Jean wants me to let you know this, because when she told me that you guys were going to be recording with us this week, I brought up the fact that my son, who is 5 years old, mm-hmm. is, hey, so he's a little bit of an amorous boy to begin with. He is a big fan of women in general. but he's a big fan of you guys particularly. He demands to listen to your album in my car constantly, and he sort of like looks longingly at the CD case while he's listening to it. So he's, yeah, I let him know that I was talking to you guys today, and he wanted me to tell you that he loves you. So
sweet.
Yeah, he's a big, big fan.
Make sure he gets
so
now.
Yeah, listen, he's a big flirter. I don't know where he gets it from.
You're in for it.
Let's.
Yeah. Good luck when he's.
So let's. Oh man, listen. Give me some time here to just breathe in his childhood first. But yeah. Let's start with Laura. You picked Peter Pan, which you mentioned earlier. But let's go into that one specifically. So you watched a lot of Disney movies when you were a kid?
Every Disney movie. Every Disney movie that came out, it was like, that was like what the year hinged upon. It was like, we're going to go see it in the theater, and then we're going to buy it and get it for Christmas or our birthday, and then we're going to watch it until we are so sick of it. And then when we're sick of it, we're going to reenact it by playing, you know, Lydia will be, you know, the dog in the nursery on Peter Pan, and I get to be Wendy. Or like, it was just this, it was this yeah. constant in our childhood. And I think so many kids, even now, have such a fondness for everything Disney. It's pretty remarkable how much of an impression it leaves.
Wait, why did I have to be the
yeah.
dog?
Because you were always the dog. Every time we had a scenario, you were the dog.
Yeah, that was my life growing up, guys.
So what do you think specifically, what made you choose Peter Pan out of all of those Disney movies?
It's just always just kind of been my, like, go-to. I don't know. I don't know if I just had, like, this. I really loved Wendy because she wasn't, like, a princess, you know? Like, she was just a regular girl who had a really wild imagination and was also kind of, like, maternal. I don't know. I don't know if it's that I identified with her or I really love just kind of the illustration in the movie. I just feel like it's particularly beautiful. Like, all the Disney movies that were, you know, animated in that way are really stunning, but I just felt like Neverland was so beautiful, and the scene in the beginning where they're flying over London as they're leaving to go to Neverland, like, it's just so gorgeous. So I think I'm just a sucker for the aesthetic of it, and I really love the music. Like, the first song as the movie opens is just so incredible. And I actually looked it up because I was curious when that movie came out. It came out in 1953, and that seems so long ago.
Yeah.
For it to have been so well done and so beautiful, I just thought, wow, that's like, it's kind of impressive that, you know, it's as old as it is, but yet still really timeless. I think I just get really, like, I fall in love with, like, this imaginary place, I think, a lot of times. And I don't know, I just loved that movie. It was like everything I ever wanted all wrapped up into one film.
It is really interesting because it's kind of a lot different than the sort of Disney princess fairy tale type movies, because it's not really a fairy tale in the same way that those other movies are. It's kind of just about this group of kids who go and have, you know, a really weird adventure, and there's all these things kind of crammed together that shouldn't be. There's Indians and mermaids and pirates and stuff. It's very different if you put it kind of in the context of all the other Disney movies we would have been watching as kids too.
Yes, that's so true. And I mean, I love, you know, the Beauty and the Beast and the Little Mermaid and all like that, but something about Peter Pan is like, I can still love it as a 30-year-old married woman, you know, like, I think that there's, and I was thinking about it, you know, kind of in preparation for this, and I was like, it's so magical, but also, like, kind of sad, because when you're an adult and you're watching it, you're like, man, like, childhood is so great, and you're so innocent, and you're, like, completely unaware that there's this big world that could just go horribly wrong at any moment, and just kind of, like, the innocence of childhood versus adulthood, it kind of makes me feel like a little overwhelmed in the way that Lydia's book made her feel overwhelmed.
Well, and really, that's kind of why I've always loved the movie Hook, which a lot of people are kind of divided on, but it's really about that. It's like an adult saying, like, you know, I wish I could sort of forget how to be an adult and right. go back to being a kid, because it's a lot better when you do it that way.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I agree.
So let's move over to Lydia's pick, which is definitely still in the fairy tale vein, but again, it's different. It's kind of a different take on it.
Yeah, it's kind of how Hook is with Peter Pan. It's kind of an adult
right.
adult adaptation of a classic story. And I've always been a sucker for classic stories, especially ones that are based in Europe, because it's just fantastical and beautiful, and I've always been drawn to that. And yeah, this movie is just an adaptation of Cinderella, but I don't know, it adds this human element to it as well. The main character, Drew Barrymore, who plays Cinderella, she's portrayed more as a woman fighting for what she believes in than a girl in a ball gown falling in love. And I just, that really connected with me, and she was portrayed as this strong, smart, and unique person instead of just like a girl who is, you know, just in love and a romantic. But I don't know, I just appreciate how they adapted the story, and it's a movie I'll watch 1,000 times and still never be tired of. I really identify with it for some reason.
Well, I mean, I think it's certainly got, like you said, it has the old world charm to it,
right.
But it is most definitely a lot more along the feminist line than you know, your problems will all be solved if the right man comes along, basically.
Totally.
She certainly takes her fate into her own hands. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. She has the reins and the power, and she's not just trying to find a man. She's like fighting for this prisoner, or a man who is in prison who is not in there justly, and she's fighting for his freedom, and I don't know, I'm just a huge fan of Drew Barrymore for some reason.
Yeah.
So it's just
that's a generational thing too. I feel like Carla Jean mentioned it earlier too. I feel like definitely women of that age group who grew up in kind of the 80s and 90s
yeah.
are big Drew Barrymore fans. What is that? Tell me what that's about a little bit. Why did she appeal so much to you guys?
I don't know. I think that she's just very real, and she doesn't try to be pretty. She just is a real person and like speaks her mind, and I'm always drawn to her in interviews. She's just like kind of just a straight talker, and also very eloquent, and I don't know, she's just I really admire her. I don't know why.
Well, great picks, guys. I like these. Everybody, you know what? With the movies, a lot of people on our show will kind of laugh at their own movie picks. But I think people kind of dismiss, you know, the sort of populist, just entertaining movies, which is what we all grow up watching. I think it's important.
Yeah, we had to be honest with ourselves here.
I wanted to choose something like really cool and deep and like,
I did
that,
too.
Like prove that I'm like really
right.
intellectual, but I'm not at all.
Everybody wants to pick Pulp Fiction, but that's not really what they
no,
want to
no,
say.
No, nobody's seen that.
So we might randomly get a moment of John jumping into Fangirl, but in the meantime, I will ask you guys some questions about your album choices. So, you guys both picked albums by incredible female singer-songwriters, and actually I think that ending with that discussion of Ever After is a perfect transition because, you know, okay, and it doesn't take much to get me talking about feminism, but, you know, this is the idea of a strong, powerful women coming out through various art forms, and not in a heavy-handed way either. So right off, I thought it was so neat that you guys both chose these strong female vocalists, and although they've both been quite successful, neither Fiona Apple nor Gillian Welch would be your sort of top 40 mass market
not at all
pick of choice.
Right.
And I thought you guys might be able to relate to that a little bit too.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of conversation in that one idea. How long do we have? Like 3 days to talk about this? Because that's how long.
Three, maybe 4 days. You know, I don't have any big appointments in the next couple days. I might have to take a short break. But seriously, like, so Lydia, you chose Fiona's Extraordinary mm-hmm. Machine. Laura chose Gillian's Revival.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, really, let's jump in wherever either of y'all want to. How did you come to these albums?
For me, I became a fan of Fiona Apple. I guess I was 16 or 17 is when I discovered Extraordinary Machine, which is, I think, her third album. Mm-hmm. But yeah, up until that point, I think I had focused all of my attention musically to bands, mainly all male bands. And I think it was mainly because I thought they were cool or attractive. And it was just like mm-hmm. so like surface level kind of fanship. But when I heard her, it was like a whole new realm opened up to me. And I realized that one person or one woman specifically can actually mm-hmm. inspire and be powerful and also subtle at the same time. And I don't know, that just really connected with me. And now that I think about it, I really believe that that album made me start to consider doing music for a living and actually believing that I could do it. I don't know. Yeah, she's just so
powerful,
unapologetically herself while also being a really profound songwriter. And she sings with like such emotion and you just really believe what she's saying. I don't know. I've just been a diehard fan of hers ever since that album. So I appreciate how she is not like trying so hard to be this like loud mm-hmm. person. She's just like a female and she's really talented and strong. And I just appreciate her subtlety.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even though a lot of what you've said could also apply in some ways to Gillian Welch.
Oh, totally.
So, Laura, tell us about how you came to Revival, her first album.
So the first time that I ever heard anything about Gillian Welch was when Oh Brother, Where Art Thou came out. I think I was maybe, like 14 or 15 when that movie came out. And, of course, the soundtrack was incredible. And I remember hearing about her on that soundtrack. And so I've always really, really liked her. But a few years ago, she came out with her most recent record. And I listened to that a good bit. And then I was like, if I like this record so much, I need to listen to all of her records. And so I bought every record that she's put out. And Revival is just, I just think it's so incredible and stunning. And the songwriting is just, it's on a level that I would equate with the writing of Harper Lee. I mean, as far as storytelling and being able to wrap up so many thoughts and so many even unspoken ideas into such a short amount of time. I mean, it's actually, when you think about writing a song, it's kind of difficult because if you're writing a standard length song, you have only a few minutes to get a really good story across or a really good point or to make whatever you're trying to say very clear. I mean, it's almost like impossible even to say what you need to say in the amount of time that is kind of the standard. But Gillian is the master of that, and every song on that record is just, it's just magnificent. And I think that the visualization that you can get when you're listening to it, it's like the same with To Kill a Mockingbird. You're listening to it and you can visualize it. And I have those same mental pictures in my mind with her songs as I do with To Kill a Mockingbird. And it's funny because what Lydia was saying about Fiona and her strength in just being herself and sticking with that, it could completely apply to Gillian as well, because she's been making the same kind of music since she started. She hasn't changed or tried to, you know, identify herself with whatever is trendy. She's just been doing the same thing. And now finally people are paying attention to it and realizing what a talent she is. But I really admire that. And it's actually an approach that we both really apply to the music that we make. You know, we're really strict about, we're just going to make music that we're proud of. We're not going to try to evolve into something that doesn't feel authentic. Fiona and Gillian are definitely big, big influences on that mindset.
I feel like Gillian is a real storyteller too, in that a lot of her songs, she keeps the same melody just kind of repeating, like the same line of a melody just the whole time, so that you don't focus on the music as much as you focus on the words. I don't know. I just think she is such a, man, I think she will go down in history as a legend for sure.
But isn't it interesting, Lydia, how like with me picking Gillian and you picking Fiona, like when we write together as the Secret Sisters, I always focus so much more on the lyrical content, and Lydia is so much more focused on melody. So of course I would pick Gillian and her storytelling lyrics, and of course you would pick Fiona with her incredible weird melodies. Like, it makes so much sense if you know the way that we write together as Secret Sisters.
That's really true. I didn't really think about that, but yeah.
See, this is the benefit of having both of y'all on the show at the same time.
Totally.
You get to analyze each other. Well, and there's some ways too that their work has some parallels or intersection with your own. So I know with Extraordinary Machine, the label had some concern about commercial appeal, and the fans stepped in some ways and really demanded, like, we need this album.
Right.
And, you know, let's say you've crowdfunded in at least some part your most recent upcoming project. So that immediately made me think, like, oh, you guys might be able to relate to that a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I actually think that Gillian, that album, if I'm not mistaken, is actually the first time I ever heard of fans crowdfunding a record. And I mean, now it happens all the time, but I remember when that record came out, reading in some magazine that, you know, her fans had demanded it and had helped her to actually release that album. And that's actually the first time I remember hearing about fans being involved on that level. No, with Fiona.
Oh, you said Gillian, so I was confused.
Oh, sorry, I meant Fiona. I meant Extraordinary Machine.
Yeah. Yeah, she had to go in and completely re-record the whole album.
Yeah, it took years for the thing to come to market because of all of that.
Yeah, totally. And she's been through the ringer, so we can identify with that quite a bit.
Yeah, but then it's neat, too. And, you know, in the age in which we live, there are pros and cons, but it is pretty cool as a fan to be able to say, you know what? I care enough about your work that I'm going to go ahead and pay for this on the front end.
Yeah.
And create the opportunity to make sure that thing becomes an album.
Right. You really have to believe in what you're making. You know, you have to just really care about it, and you have to not care what happens. You know, there's a certain aspect of it to where you have to care so much about what you need to say that you don't care if millions of people end up buying it and loving it, or if the critics give it rave reviews. I mean, I've reached that point with this third record. It's like this third record for us has been so cathartic that I really don't care if, you know, only 20 people hear the record, because we needed to say it. And I think that so many, especially women songwriters and performers, they create music because they need to say something, and it doesn't matter who hears it, but it needs to be said. And I think that that's true for Fiona and for Gillian and so many other female artists that we admire. It's pretty remarkable to be a woman who makes music, especially in a world that doesn't take very kindly to, you know, atypical left of center women performers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll never see Gillian on, you know, the CMA Awards. You'll never, you know, see her in all these mainstream places. Like, Fiona is not ever really going to be on the radio other than the success she had in the 90s. So, I don't know. I think it's nice to be able to look to those women that we admire and go, I don't have to be on the radio to be happy and successful. I don't have to win, you know, all these mainstream awards to be satisfied with what I'm doing. So, I don't know. That's my approach anyway.
And back to crowdfunding, it's been really encouraging for us to see how much our fans believe in us and believe that we will come out with something that is a quality product, and they're willing to be patient with us, and they just root us on every step of the way. So it's been a real confidence booster in that respect.
And I know that y'all have also performed with Fiona on at least one occasion, because right. I was there. So what was that experience like?
It was wonderful. We were both so nervous, because we are both, I mean, Lydia is probably the bigger, more diehard Fiona fan, but we both really, really love her and admire her. And so when we got invited to be on that show that she was on, we were like kind of nervous, because we knew that she would be around and that we might meet her. And there's always that like real fear that they're not going to be nice, or that they're going to really disappoint you in a significant way, and it'll forever change the way you perceive them. But she was wonderful. She was backstage, and she was just like the exact amount of weird that you want Fiona Apple to be. Like, she, I'm going to tell my favorite story, and then Lydia, you need to tell your story. One of my favorite moments backstage is that everyone was kind of getting ready for the show. You know, most girls would be like fixing their hair or putting makeup on or whatever. And Fiona was talking to someone, and she was, I got to go get ready for the show. And I was like, oh, I got to watch this and see what she does. And so out the corner of my eye, I watch her, and she goes over to a mirror, and she pulls out a permanent marker and starts writing all over her arms, like just like random, like squiggles and like stuff about dogs, like just writing all over her skin. And I just thought, like, how perfect that the way Fiona Apple gets ready for a show is to just write with a Sharpie all these things on her arms. Like, it was just so delightfully what everything that I wanted Fiona Apple to be, she was in that moment.
Yeah, I was sitting pretty close to the front at that show when we were trying to scrutinize, what do her arms say?
Right. And I think it's different at every show. Like, every show that she does, she writes something different, but it's all just, and I've seen people, like, fans comment and be like, are those tattoos? And I'm like, nope, they're not.
They're just Fiona being Fiona.
Yeah. Lydia, you got to tell your story about Fiona.
Well, mine might not be as good, but we were backstage sitting on a couch talking to Fiona, and I remember, I don't know if it was you or me, Laura, but we said how much of a fan we both are of her. We said, you know, we've been listening to your albums for years. You kind of shaped a lot of our music, and we were just kind of geeking out the whole time. And she was just like, oh, that's so sweet. And then she literally leaned down and kissed our feet. She kissed our toes. not just like the top of our feet, like our toes. like Laura said,
that had to be a humbling moment.
Yeah, it totally was. It was just like,
so weird.
That's kind of weird. And if anybody else did that to me, I would kind of be freaked out, but I never want to wash my toes again.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, she really is the perfect amount of weird. I've seen her a couple of times. I think every time I've seen her, Sarah and Sean Watkins were also there, because she did a show with Nickel Creek in Central Park a zillion years ago.
Wow,
and
cool.
It was just mind-blowing. But then, you know, one of the neat things to me about the show that we're talking about, The Watkins Family Hour in Nashville, was, you know, clearly Fiona took to y'all, but then sitting in the audience, my friends, who some of whom were like, I don't know who the Secret Sisters are, afterward they were like, they stole the show. They were the best part. And so it's just really cool to see people getting to perform with artists who they admire, and then that mutual admiration developing, and I don't know, it just makes me smile, basically, is what I'm getting at.
I feel like that's becoming more of a thing now, the collaborative part of it. I feel like people used to be more to themselves as artists, but now I feel like it's more inclusive. People are invited to their shows, and, you know, they want to write with everyone. I really, that's one great thing that has come from music these days.
What a wonderful experience.
Yeah,
and
totally.
There is one more thing I wanted to ask y'all about in relation to your picks, because so you've had the opportunity to perform with Fiona, but then you also share some DNA, if you will, with Gillian, you know, both sonically, you know, she's got that sort of like darker, folkier sound going on, but then also, you know, the album that you picked was produced by T-Bone Burnett, who y'all have also had opportunity to work with.
That's right.
It's neat to see that sort of those common threads.
That's true. I think a lot of the reason why I love that album so much is that sonically it's very pristine. And that's what I love about the work that T-Bone does, is that the records that he produces never get on my nerves. I never grow tired of them. There's never anything that greats in any way. I just think sonically they're such masterpieces. But yeah, Gillian, yeah, I think she's got kind of a long-standing relationship with T-Bone. We actually got to kind of hang out with her a few years ago at this review that T-Bone put together in New York for a film that he had worked on, and she was just like so, like, it was just enigmatic in a way is how I would describe her. And we were, again, really intimidated by her, but she's just so, I don't know. She's just a character out of a book, it seems like. She's great. So, I mean, yeah, to even get to brush elbows with those kind of people that have made things that are so impactful for the music that we create, it's probably the best part of the job. And I think that, you know, you were talking about how great it is when you get to see artists collaborate with each other, and maybe even, you know, two artists that you really love individually, when they come together to do something, it's extra special. And I think that fans really love to watch artists have that fangirl moment, you know, where all their wildest dreams come true in front of the crowd who's watching it happen. So that's, I think that's been a really special part of our experience as artists. And I mean, I don't know where we would be without Gillian and Fiona. I really don't.
It's true. And I'll ask one final wrap up. If our listeners want to follow your work, where can they find you on the internet?
We can be found on our website. We have a website called www.secretsistersband.com. I know that's very original. And then we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff. And we'll be sharing pictures from our Christmas tour as we go along in a couple weeks. So easy to find.
Yes, and hopefully some of our listeners will be able to make it to those shows as well.
Yeah, we would love that.
That's it for this week's episode of Triple Take. We'll be back next week with another interview. I'm Carla Jean Whitley, and you can find me on social media at InkStainedLife.
I'm Matt Scalise. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and other things at Matt Scalise.
We'll be back with y'all next week.
Oh, hang on. John's here. Come in. You need to say hi, because I did tell them that you were sad. Hang on. I'm going to give John the phone so he can fanboy for a minute.
Okay.
I told them that.
Yep.
Hey, John.
Hi. Sorry, hey, John. I didn't get to join the podcast, but I did see y'all open for Nickel Creek at the Fox Theater in Oakland a couple of years ago.
Oh, wow. That's so fun.
That was a good tour.
It was a great show. and I just wanted to say hi. So I'm glad y'all did the podcast, and I look forward to listening to it. This will be the first one I've listened to not having participated in it before.
It was a really good show, John.
Yeah, I'm excited. It was probably better than all the shows I've participated in.